This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Welcome to Radioactive Magazine, and we have our host tonight is Spencer Graves. Spencer?
Yes, so thank you, Bill. This episode of Radioactive Magazine features a discussion among four local journalists representing local news outlets in Kansas City. Each will describe their particular foci of their news organization, why they think the people in Kansas City should value the news they report. Kelsey Ryan of The Beacon has a recorded message that we'll play at the end of the show. We got John Sharp from the Martin City and South Kansas City Telegraph, Michael Bushnell of the Northeast Kansas of the Northeast News, and Kyle Palmer of the Shawnee Mission Post. John Sharp, why don't you start?
Okay, well, thank you so much. I'm John Sharp, and I write a column for the Martin City South KC Telegraph, and we're a free paper, although we do have mail subscriptions, and we throw to some homes associations, but we print about 13,000 copies every edition, although we print more on special editions, and we really try to cover events in the Southland and South Kansas City, Martin City, Grandview areas, and there's sure a lot going on out here that we just don't see much about in the daily paper, and we try to let people know what's going on in their communities, and we've been real fortunate in that we've gotten a lot of support from the community. People seem to really like the paper. We hardly ever get any back when we go around. We come out every 2 weeks, and when we go around to pick up any leftover from the last edition, there are not many left over, and we have to restock some places like the Price Chopper out in Truman's Marketplace in Grandview. We have to restock it several times because they just pick up all the papers, and we've gotten good advertising participation too. So people seem to really enjoy finding out what's going on in their community, and we try to focus on the positive things as well as the negative things, too. There's plenty of negative news, but some outlets don't say much about the good things going on. And for instance, we had a lot of toy drives, food drives, clothing drives out here for needy families during the holidays, and we ran pictures of all of them. And we do try to promote the good things that are going on. And we've got a lot of new developments coming out here that are bringing new jobs here, and that's really helping our community. So we feel like we've been accepted very well, and we think we're letting people know about things that they need to know about.
Wonderful. Michael Bushnell?
Hi, Michael Bushnell. I publish the Northeast News in Kansas City, Missouri. We are a local community newspaper, locally owned. We publish every Wednesday. We're weekly. We print roughly 10,000 copies on a weekly basis, and our Facebook page has roughly 18,000 followers, and we get between 30 and 35,000 visits to our website on a monthly basis. I just want to echo what John said. There's not a lot of focus on the kind of journalism, the community journalism, that the rest of the panelists, like Kyle, John, and myself, focus on. And you're not going to see the TV stations and the radio stations come into our community unless something bad happens. And then they swoop in, cover the news, and then they're off to the next assignment, wherever that is in the metro. I'm not saying that's a bad model. That's just not the model that we follow. And we, as John said, I'll echo exactly what he said. We're there for the food drives. What's great about this is, like during Lent, you get to go to the fish fries, and you get to report on those, and, you know, the chili dinners for the Boy Scouts, where really nobody else is reporting on that kind of news. And so we have a very, very strong following, and we focus on hard news, but we also focus on telling people's stories. And when you're in a community that is between 100 and 150 years old, and some of your residents have lived here for 50, 60, 70 years, a good example and a story that I'm extremely proud of is Joe Vento. He was a local barber. He barbered here on Independence Avenue for 63 years, and he was born in the neighborhood, stayed in the neighborhood, started cutting hair when he was 15 years old. Well, he retired in June because of the pandemic and what it did to business. He tried to open back up, and he's 80 years old. I'm 61, so he's 81. And he just decided, you know what, I'm going to take it. I'm going to walk. So we brought him in and sat him down and did a nice profile piece of his 60 years in business. And got him, you know, we did the, since we're a print product, we did the front page for him, mounted it on the foam core, and took that out to him at his home. He lives in Ray Peck. But that was one of the most, you know, that was one of the things that I was really proud of, because, you know, you don't have people break down in your office because they're happy. And he broke down because we took the time to tell his story. And that was the very first, we have interns on every summer, and that was the very first assignment that our summer intern had, and she did a lot of the questioning. And so we've called her back on a number of different occasions. She's working for us now over the Christmas break. So, I think the thing that I'm most proud of this past year is because we were recognized by our peers at the Missouri Press Association for an ad campaign that we put together for the Northeast Chamber of Commerce and Independence Avenue CID. And that program was voted best in show for community weeklies in the state of Missouri. And so I'm extremely, you know, having owned the paper for 22 years, I'm extremely proud of that. And just being a part of the team, I'm not really, I might own it with my wife, but I'm more a part of the team. I'll go out and cover stories, and I get edited just like everybody else. So it's just being part of a great team, putting out an award-winning product and being a value to your community. That's what it is for me.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Kyle.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Spencer, and KKFI. I'm Kyle Palmer. I am the editor of the Shawnee Mission Post in Johnson County, Kansas. I've only been on this job about 5 months. I joined in August. For people listening, you may know that Jay Center and his wife, Julia Westhoff, founded the paper 10 years ago. In fact, we crossed our 10-year anniversary in June. And they're still daily involved in the paper on the business side and subscriber relations side, but the editorial reins have been handed over to me. I think, like, you know, Mr. Bushnell and Mr. Sharp said, you know, Johnson County, Kansas is a vast space with over 450,000 residents that does not get covered on a daily basis by the Kansas City Star or the local TV stations, and no detriment to them. It's just with their resource allocation, they've made different decisions. And so Jay, I think, very smartly saw a gap in coverage, and we cover the local city council meetings in Northeast Johnson County. We cover the school boards at Shawnee Mission School District and USD 232. We cover the clothing drives and food drives and the local business openings, which tend to be our most popular stories and posts on our website. And we cover the community. And there is a real hunger for that type of very hyper-local community-based reporting in the cities that we cover. And our general footprint is the outlines of the Shawnee Mission School District, because that's where the Post started. It actually started centered around Prairie Village. Some people listening may remember it as the Prairie Village Post, but now it's expanded to be the Shawnee Mission Post. So we basically cover everything inside the 435 loop in Northeast Johnson County. So that's, you know, Prairie Village, Merriam, Mission, Fairway, North Overland Park, North Leawood, Shawnee, and Lenexa, and some other cities in there as well. And there just is a lot going on. We're a digital-only publication. We just recently passed 4,000 paying subscribers on our website, which was a big deal for us. And most of our revenue now comes from subscribers. We still do have advertisers. But most of our revenue now comes from people who pay to get our product. And that models a lot of the nonprofit type journalism that I came from before the Post. I used to work at KCUR, Kansas City's public radio station. And there's a real direct relationship between listeners and members in that station. And I would say the same for the Post with our subscribers and us. We are relentlessly focused on what is best for our readers and what they want and need. And so it's not just the big splashy stories that relate to national news, but it's very, very much related to what is going on in their daily lives. If we hear police sirens at night, or if we drive by something and there's a new sign up that advertises a new business, myself and our reporters are members of our community, and so our ears prick up, and we go back and try to figure out what's happening because we know that our readers are doing the same thing.
Wonderful. John, you want to talk about one of the big stories that you carried this past year?
Well, a lot of our stories have been about new developments out here that have brought jobs and residents to our area. The old Bannister Federal Complex, of course, has been demolished now and cleaned up, and we're seeing the first big industrial building under construction there now. And that project is expected by the time that redevelops as an industrial park to bring in about 2,000 jobs to South Kansas City, which we really are looking forward to. We've covered a lot about the Redbridge Shopping Center being redeveloped because it was over 50% vacant. And you didn't have any trouble parking there back then, but you do now because it has really been revitalized, and Wonderscope Children's Museum has just opened up there. That's a regional attraction, and that's going to make it even more successful. So we have tried to do a lot about the things that are bringing jobs and economic opportunity out here. We have covered the horrendous homicide rate we have here in Kansas City pretty heavily because we just think it's inexcusable. And some folks think, well, that's just normal for living in a big city, but our murder rate per 100,000 people is way above the average for cities our size. And hopefully, now that we've got a witness protection bill passed the legislature and funded and in place, more people will be willing to come forward and tell the police what they know. And so some of these violent repeat offenders can be prosecuted and incarcerated before they hurt other people. So that's kind of an exception to the positive slant we've tried to put on things. But we think it's such an important issue that the public has to be aware about it and to rise up and demand that we stop this soaring homicide rate.
Wonderful. Kyle, what's a big story that you've been involved with recently?
Well, we've, of course, done a lot of reporting about the local impacts of COVID-19, and Johnson County is a really interesting place to cover in that regard, both because there are a lot of, I think, competing political dynamics going on within the county, as well as a lot of local jurisdictions that have their own control over how to implement restrictions. And so one of the big stories we've been covering over the last month is how local cities have followed up on the county commission's move to put some enforcement teeth towards some COVID-19 restrictions. And so most of the cities in our coverage area have decided to go along with the county and agree to allow the county to help them enforce and give them resources to enforce some of the restrictions. But one city has not, and that's Shawnee. And Shawnee is a very interesting case in and of itself. So that's one of the things we've been covering. You know, I will say, not just, you know, with big stories like the pandemic, but smaller stories that I think Mr. Bushnell and Mr. Sharp mentioned that don't get covered by the larger metro-wide media, and things like a local taqueria opening up that was very popular on our site a few weeks ago. Just last week, we put up a list of places to go see holiday lights around Northeast Johnson County, and that got a lot of response. Things that are useful for our audience. We try to wake up every day thinking about what is going to be able to be used by our readers, not just to make them informed about their community, but literally what are they going to be able to read on our site that's going to be able to make them happier, more productive citizens, more efficient at going about their day. And so, you know, it's a combination of doing things like, you know, how are local city councils dealing with the pandemic, as well as things that might seem more superficial, like holiday lights, which for a lot of our readers is not superficial at all.
Right. Great. Thank you. You know, I've heard from a couple of sources. Kelsey Ryan mentioned it in the piece that you'll hear the audience will hear at the end of the show. The U.S. has lost something like half its newspaper journalists in the past decade. Has that impacted you all? What's your reaction to that?
Well, I could mention something real quickly. The paper I used to be a reporter and editor for is gone, because I used to work for the Kansas City Kansan newspaper in Wyandotte County when it was a stalking publication. And, you know, we were a daily paper, and it just broke my heart when it ended its service, because there was, I think, a real need for coverage over there in Wyandotte County. But I think the community papers still have a real niche, because, as everyone else has mentioned, the metropolitan media really doesn't get down into the weeds and cover the things in your own community. And the things in your own community have more of an impact on your life day to day than some of these big issues. So I think there's still a need and a desire for community newspapers.
Absolutely. And I'll just, your experience is not isolated at all, John. I interviewed a Professor Penny Abernathy, who's a Knight Chair of Journalism and Digital Communications or something like that at University of North Carolina Chapel Hill for a broadcast on October 8th on KKFI. And one of the things she said was, indeed, the U.S. has lost a quarter of its newspapers in the last 15 years. And many of those that have survived have gone from dailies to weeklies or so forth. Michael, we haven't heard from you recently. Tell us more about what you're up to.
Well, just to kind of echo what John and what Kyle have said, you know, we try to, we're hyper-local, and that's our forte. And that's something that, you know, you talk about the loss of journalism or the loss of journalists, print journalists specifically. Obviously, locally, we look at the Kansas City Star and what's going on there. And they seem to be, God forbid, I don't know, they seem to be in a death spiral of sorts. I was talking with somebody up in Omaha today, and the Omaha World Herald seems to be suffering the same fate. And I'm very happy to be in the community journalism business, because there's not a whole heck of a lot of people out here that are doing what we do, how we do it. And kind of like what Kyle said, I mean, I live in my community. I'm embedded here. So I go to bed here. I do business here. I walk my dog here, and my clients are my friends. And so I think that you bring an awful lot of institutional knowledge to the table when you've lived in a community like I have, this community, for 30 years, and something pops up, and, yeah, you need to go talk to Bill down at the bank, or Charlie over at the funeral home, or Bobby over at the chamber office. And, well, who's that? How do I get? And you just pick up your phone and go, well, they're at dot, 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 dot. Give them a call. And it's right. Something that some of the younger journalists coming in, they just look at you going, what did you say? What? How do I do that? But it's really a lot of fun. And I still get a big charge out of, you know, going out and covering a breaking news story and being the first one out there with it, because we still can scoop the big guys. And, you know, we do it every month on them. But How many people, I'm lucky. I've got a 12-foot bridge on Independence Avenue that catches trucks all day long. And when we go down and we cover that, our Facebook, our posts, our social media just goes through the roof. And says, oh, yeah, now I know where you live. So we found out about a guy. This is really kind of a fun story. We found out about a guy who loves the bridge so much, he went out and he got it tattooed, the 12-foot sign, tattooed on his arm. And so we found out about that. We go out and do a Faces of Northeast with that cool cat, and people just loved it. And it's those kind of community news stories. It's a bridge. Well, he got a tattoo of the clearance sign on the bridge. Well, go cover it. Go ask him some questions. And it was just a blast to cover. It's fun. It's still fun for me.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely right. And, you know, the research that has me worried and has me volunteering with KKFI and so forth and so on says that as news dies, you get less voter participation. The politicians don't pay as much attention, and the cost of government goes up. You get worse government if you're not investing in the news. So we've got just time for one more comment from one of the three of you.
I will just say to piggyback off what Michael was just talking about, and I will say you should make that bridge your masthead, by the way, as opposed to the arches. being part of your community, being, you know, a reporter and a journalist who lives in the cities and communities that you report on, it creates a certain level, a different level of accountability than maybe what some other journalists might experience, either, you know, if you work at a big metro daily or even, you know, a paper or an outlet that covers the state or the nation. Because the people you report on, the city council members and the mayors and the business owners and the entrepreneurs and the residents who are mentioned in your articles, they will read your words and they will tell you if you got something wrong. Probably 3 or 4 minutes after it goes up on the website. Mm-hmm. So it creates a different level of accountability in terms of not only getting your facts right, but just also trying to portray things fairly and equitably. And try to truly get both sides. And I think all the time about Johnson County really being ideologically split right now between a growing population of young, you know, generally younger, more liberal people who have moved into the county and people who are more old guard and maybe potentially more conservative. It's an interesting dynamic, and you'll hear from both sides all the time on different stories that we publish. And I've generally told myself that if I'm hearing from both sides, it typically means we're doing something right. So it just creates a different level of accountability to make sure that you get things right when you're reporting on the community that you yourself live in and are a part of.
That's great. I think we have to leave it there. I'm going to play a piece that I recorded from Kelsey Ryan. She's the founder of the Beacon.media, TheBeacon.media. You can get, they were launched earlier this year.
All of us in our society just really need to be informed, right? You know, that's kind of the basis for why journalism is a thing. It's, you know, we like to, you know, remember that it's one of the only professions actually put into our Constitution, and that there's a whole amendment that includes that as well. So, I was a political science major, so I always love to get on that, you know, democracy soapbox. But that is, you know, that's a key part of why journalism is so important. Those foundations, those basics, and getting back to it. And I feel like, especially in the time that we're in now, with a public health crisis that's been going on for 9 months, and, you know, on the heels of the 2020 election. You know, this is just a time that, you know, as citizens and members of the public, we have to be informed, and we have to be part of that civic process. We did a lot of community engagement work. One of the things that was a resounding finding from talking to folks in our community was that, you know, there are so many opinions out there and not enough facts. And so that really helped drive our decision making to just do straight news and to not have an opinion section, because so many people had talked about, you know, how difficult it was to discern, and that they felt like, you know, they were getting a lot of opinions, but they weren't always getting, you know, the background information or the in-depth reporting that they needed in order to really feel informed. This past year, we had one of our full-time reporters was a Report for America Corps member. And Report for America is a national program that helps place journalists in newsrooms across the country. And I'm really pleased to tell everyone that today we were finally able to announce that we're actually getting 5 more Report for America reporters for the Beacon. And this, I'm just ecstatic about it. We know at least one of them will be a data journalist focused on government accountability reporting. We just had our first community advisory board meeting as well. And so I believe it was 10 folks from across the metro and the region who it's a really great way for our reporters to not be siloed. You know, so often in journalism, journalists talk to a lot of other journalists, right? And you know, we aren't always talking to our community members enough. So in addition to having our reporters do events, to having our reporters, you know, work on engagement directly with folks, we've got this community advisory board where we can really kind of have our ears to the ground on some of the issues that are important to folks in the community and helps inform the reporters. So I'm just incredibly excited about it. This is a newer thing in journalism. At least, you know, it's becoming more mainstream to have community advisory boards. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, the journalists still are making the decisions about the stories that we cover and have that journalistic independence. But it's just so incredibly important to have these direct communications with people in the community. Journalism is a public service. There has been mass consolidation in media across the United States. Half the newspaper reporters in the United States have lost their jobs in the last decade. And a lot of that has to do with the failing business model of newspapers. And, you know, I can pull out data and research and studies and all of that about how, you know, they've basically tied the lack of news coverage on the local and state level to increased political polarizations. When you know, there's fewer journalists, the costs and the spending of government goes up. I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons why journalism is so important. And the profit motive is you know, something that personally I feel has been a problem in media. When you have huge pay discrepancies between what reporters make and CEOs make for news organizations, and you know, that's a major problem. And so, you know, the local control aspect is important, but also coming up with ways to sustainably fund journalism. One of our articles from Brittany Callen, who's the Report for America Corps member covering health and environment, you know, she did a story about how there was inconsistency for COVID testing sites in certain communities, and the authorities read that article and changed, you know, to have more consistency in where the testing was held and what times it was being held. We had a reporter, Salisa Calicall. She was doing a story on the election website security throughout Kansas and Missouri, seeing if they were actually secure websites where county election results are posted. You know, this is how they get the news out for their county. And we had several folks, as we were doing the interviews, tell her, oh, well, we're going to update to HTTPS now, because they weren't secure. They were just HTTP. And I know that's a small thing, right? It's a single letter, but it makes a world of difference for, you know, the integrity of these county election sites. We also did a lot of coverage of poll workers and how, especially with the elderly poll workers, you know, they were more at risk for COVID. And so there were concerns about them being in person. We had folks who told us they signed up to be poll workers because of our coverage.